Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 6th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown, as always. And Alex, can you believe that it's July?
I know. And quite frankly, things are still very busy on our site, Graham. This is not July activity, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're not going to get a rest. I'm realizing, like, we're not really going to get a rest. Or I'm going to just, you know, we'll be recording some of these. I'll be on vacation and we'll just be recording them as we go. But it's kind of crazy. This year has just been 1 year's applicant group is kind of melded into the next year's because of some of these late round applications, as we've said. And obviously there's this whole new crop of candidates. I think it's going to be a big group of candidates this year due to layoffs and, you know, COVID-19 and people heading for the safety of a full-time MBA program. Lots going on. I did want to mention that, as you probably saw, we've kicked off the admissions director Q&A series. In the last week alone, we've run admissions director Q&As where we had Chad Losey from Harvard on the site. We had Blair Mannix from Wharton. And we also connected with NYU and actually got a chance to speak with Lisa Rios over there. So a lot of really good. Those pieces that are up on the website are great because we asked very kind of specific questions of the admissions directors to talk to us about, like, how they review files, what they look for in the essays. And also this year we're asking, like, well, how is their process different because of COVID-19? And we also added a question this year about, like, wanting them to highlight a couple of professors that they think, you know, students should be paying attention to, kind of up-and-comers or just people who are really great at their school. So I'm sure you've been reading those, Alex, but we've got it. Yeah, so there are many, many more in the pipeline that are coming, but those are the ones that we've rolled out to kick things off this year.
Yeah, who did Blair Mannix suggest as a professor to look out for? I'm curious about that now.
Now, I'm not going to remember the names, but there's one professor, there's a newer professor, I'll have to look it up, but she's like a healthcare expert and has been contributing to some of the schools. You remember how Wharton rolled out a COVID-19 kind of impact on business online course? And I believe that, this professor whose name, I'll grab it while we're on here, but yeah, so she highlighted that woman, and then there was another one. I'll pull them up while we're chatting, but yeah, it's interesting to see, because in some cases the schools are going after, like, oh, these are our two most famous professors that everyone always talks about. Or in other cases, you know, like, I think it was over at HBS, we got some kind of folks that are a little bit more kind of up and coming, you know, younger faculty who are doing really interesting things. And so for Wharton, it was Eric Bradlow, who's, I guess, Vice Dean of Wharton. Do you know Eric Bradlow or no?
I think so. Is he a marketing dude?
Yeah, that's right. Vice Dean of Wharton Analytics and a professor of marketing.
I'm connected to him on LinkedIn. So, I'm well connected.
There you go. Right. And then the other one from Wharton was Ingrid Nembhard, and she's a professor of healthcare management. And so, again, I remember when I did we did a podcast with another Wharton professor who's leading that COVID-19 online course, but he had mentioned at the time that Ingrid Nembhard was going to be a part of that whole process. So yeah, this has been fun. We'll keep rolling more of those out.
And what about Stern though, Graham? I mean, what do you think about their move to open up their admissions to any standardized test on the planet? Or at least that's how I read it.
Yeah, I saw... Yeah, they're taking the GMAT, the GRE, the MCAT, the dental standardized test for dental school. I think there might be some others on the list too. I will say there are other schools. I think Ross and Darden have in the past been open to a variety of tests, including the MCAT. It's an interesting choice. I mean, I understand. I mean, the business school is basically saying, look, most of these standardized tests get at general academic aptitude. We're interested in that. And they also, I believe, want to cast a really wide net. And they recognize that there may be people out there who would benefit from an MBA, but for whom, like, having to take another test might just be an impediment to kind of even going down that path. So I think they're just trying to keep things open. I will say, I don't think it's great news for, you know, the folks over at GMAC or even ETS with the GRE, because, you know, obviously, as long as business schools have their own exam, There'll be, you know, there's a, it just, well, it means more money for, you know, for GMAC and ETS with the GRE and the GMAT. And as soon as everything goes, it does raise the question of at what point does a school say, we'll take any test or no tests at all. We'll just look at GPA, right? So that's always the,
that's what I wonder if we're moving to a stage where the test no longer becomes required.
Yeah.
And I think obviously during this sort of COVID-19 extended round deadline situation, we're seeing schools admit candidates with the test waiver. So there's precedent there.
Yeah.
I think they're asking them to take the test when they can and get a sort of threshold score or something like that, or at least in some cases they're doing that. But nevertheless, these are not moves that GMAT will be thrilled about.
No. The only other thing I will say, though, is that a lot of these moves to expand the applicant pool come in times of declining application volume, which has been the case for the last several years. And I think schools are, really looking, or had been, certainly looking to expand the pool. If the current trend with COVID-19 and the, you know, economy struggling a bit continues, we should see an uptick in volume. And so we might see the tables reversing once again. And you know, getting to a place where schools can make these kinds of demands. No, you got to take our test if you want to come, because they feel like they have so many applicants that they don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a broader trend that's kind of outstripping the cyclical nature towards, you know, multiple tests and maybe no tests at all. So we'll see how this evolves. But the only other thing I wanted to mention before we dive into the three candidates that you've picked for this week's wiretaps is I just wanted to mention that tomorrow is going to be the second class in our MBA Admissions Academy. So that's slated for, Tuesday, July 7th, and it's at noon Eastern. You have to sign up in advance, but it is free. And I'm excited because this is the first one went really well. We did have a recording glitch, but we'll figure that out this time around to get people to be able to watch it after the fact. But this time we're going to be talking about choosing schools to apply to. And it's not what you think. This isn't going to just be the basic, like, oh, how many schools and how do I pick? It's going to be really in-depth in terms of, like, how you go about deciding exactly where to apply, what rounds to put those apps in on, and how to mix, you know, your kind of types of school. And we just have a whole bunch of things. We're even going to get into a breakdown of how to use rankings and what we think of the major rankings. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to that. And I'm not really ready yet, but luckily we're recording this a little bit in advance, so I'll have some time.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing your slide deck, Graham. Yeah, it sounds like you've done a lot of work on it.
yeah, getting there. And I did want to thank, we had a couple of reviews coming on the podcast, so we're now... we still have like a 5-star rating, but we got some really nice reviews and, people just seem to think we're offering, true insights into the MBA admissions process. So we'll try to keep that going here. Anything you wanted to say before we kind of dive in on the profiles that you'd selected for this week?
No, I do appreciate all the terrific feedback in the reviews. So yeah, I'm just very grateful that folks, or at least some folks, are enjoying what we're doing, Graham.
Yeah, same. Very much so. So let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number one. So this is an ApplyWire entry, and actually all entries this week are going to be ApplyWire. We have a whole bunch of people who are thinking of applying for the coming season. This person is targeting 7 schools, which include Berkeley, Harvard, MIT, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago, and Wharton.
Yeah, this person just doesn't want to go to Columbia.
Right, M7 minus Columbia plus Haas. I don't know what's going on there. But pre-MBA career is as a submarine officer. So I'm going to go out on a limb and assume kind of military. I don't think that many people have like submarines for leisure stuff. But so they're a submarine officer. Post-MBA career goal is technology. Looking at companies like Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Twitter. GMAT score 740, GPA 3.73, and this person has 5 years of work experience located in Maryland, which was another clue to me that they must be military. And then post-MBA location is West Coast of the United States, and they want to do a joint MBA-MS in like computer science or similar to sort of transition into the tech industry as a project manager. What do you make of this profile? And we don't know if it's a male or female, but, you know, military person, good numbers. But what do you think of this plan that they have here and the school selection?
I mean, I think the potential here is through the roof. they want to be on the West Coast. They've got Stanford in their list of target schools. That's very good. I'd be very curious the what means most to me and why sort of first essay at Stanford. Because, you know, the goal, you know, product manager in the tech industry is sort of coming straight out of school. But what is the long-term passion and vision of this person? And really understanding that would be terrific. And we had a bit of a conversation before we came on air about each of the candidates. And for this candidate, you know, we were, you know, product management in the tech space, that's a good goal to have as long as you have the requisite sort of stuff ahead of time. So is their career as a submariner, did that have a tech focus itself? Is their undergraduate record, is that from a technical major, or whatever you want to call it, to align with being a product manager in the tech industry? Because you kind of have to have that for those types of roles. But I got to imagine these top tech firms are really attracted to top veterans coming out of the military that have had some great experience. And yeah, we don't know much about this person's actual military experience, but if it's top draw military experience like we see at the, you know, for candidates applying to the top schools, then this is going to be a super candidate in my book, Graham.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, the numbers are there. The work experience is there. The transition from military to tech, I think, you know, it's smart that they're looking at doing an MS in computer science to facilitate that. But I mean, you know, whenever, I mean, I've never been on a submarine, but, you know, I've seen some movies about them. And they have, you know, I mean, obviously there's a huge technical component to being a submarine officer. There has to be, yeah. Right? So it's not like a complete leap for them to want to do this kind of career shift. And as you say, you know, I think a lot of the companies are drawn to military folk because of their leadership skills, yeah, and ability to kind of operate under pressure and to work in teams. So I think, yeah, everything is here. I just, the thing that was missing that they didn't offer any information on is like, what else do they do? And I recognize if you're out on a submarine at sea, there maybe isn't, you know, you're not like going to the local soup kitchen and helping people out, right? You're stuck. But they must have other interests and have done other things too. And so I just would encourage them to bring that aspect out so that they don't seem like they're just, you know, that's the only thing that they've ever, we don't want like a one-dimensional,
right,
candidacy. So, but otherwise, I love this candidacy. Hopefully this person knows about Service to School, which is a free kind of a nonprofit that helps military folks navigate the MBA admissions process. And we work a little bit with them and, you know, so they can make use of the resources on our site. But the guys at Service to School will give great advice, specifically when it comes to like talking about your military experience in a way that the MBA admissions officers will kind of understand and stuff. So, but no, great candidate overall.
Yeah, a couple of additional points, Graham. One is to make sure this candidate does reach out to each of the schools they're applying, their respective veterans clubs, so they're sort of in the loop there.
Yeah.
And getting guidance directly from the schools in that regard, that would be very important. And I'll just push it back to you. They're planning to do or want to do, as you mentioned, a joint MBA, a Masters in Computer Science. Do they need to do that, Graham, to execute on these goals? Or would they be able to navigate this transition with solely the MBA?
Great question. I tend to think they could, well, they could go to work at Amazon or some of these companies coming from military, you know, go and get an MBA and then go right into tech. The issue is that they'd be probably more likely to fall into like a rotational management program at one of these tech companies, or, you know, kind of more of a just managerial role as opposed to like a product management role where you do get a little bit more down and dirty with, you know, with the tech side.
Right.
So that because of that goal, I'm like, okay, you know, the MS may make sense. And I guess it also would just depend for me, like what did they study as an undergraduate? I mean, they might have taken some computer science and learned some things on the job and be like relatively, you know, competent, and it might be enough. But I would actually advise that they just talk to some people at these companies and explain their background and their goals and see if the folks at, you know, Microsoft or wherever would say, yeah, do the joint degree.
Yeah.
It'll make us more confident in hiring you. But I mean, I've, you know, you see it all the time. Most military people coming to get an MBA do not do a joint degree, and many of them do go into tech. So it's not an impossible move at all.
Yeah, no, great point. And I did just want to bring that up because, you know, doing a dual degree is a significant additional undertaking.
Yeah, and cost.
And, you know, the cost and recognizing that in most MBA programs, you can take elective courses in other schools at the university in which you're enrolled. So if you just wanted to take some computer science courses, you might be able to do that through the MBA, through the elective offerings.
Fair point. So, well, enough said on that candidate. I think, again, best of luck to he or she as they pursue this this path. But all the makings are here for a solid showing at the schools on their target list. Let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire applicant. This person's got 9 schools on their list, including Carnegie Mellon, Tuck, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU, UCLA, UNC, and USC Marshall. They want to start school in the fall of 2021. They have a pre-MBA career that's sort of split in two. They have this piece where they were doing pharma and biotech for like about 2.5 years. And then more recently, they've moved into event management, which is actually a family business. And they explained in the notes that due to some personal reasons, they literally had to go back home and run their family's event management business, which I believe is like wedding planning and other big, big events in India. This person is based in India. They're not sure what they want to do after business school, but as we had some conversation with them on the site, or you specifically, Alex, had some conversation with them, they seem to think that there, you know, might be some something emerging in the kind of healthcare consulting domain. They'd love to be in the U.S. after business school, and their GRE score 319, GPA 7.4, or really 74%, because it's an Indian GPA. And they've had 4 years of work experience. So what do you make of this candidate, Alex? Because there's it's sort of a non-traditional with respect to the work experience, but then also overrepresented because kind of Indian, you know, initially at least working in kind of a more technical role in pharma. So yeah, what do you make of this? This is an interesting case.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, someone of Indian heritage, someone who's Indian, with a 319 GRE, that's going to be a bit of a sticking point right from the beginning. When you're targeting the top programs, you're part of an overrepresented piece of the pool. And typically of this heritage, they do well on the test scores. So you're going to be behind the eight ball a bit here. So my first recommendation is you've got to retake this test if you think there's any opportunity to increase that score. I mean, obviously, the candidate might think, well, 319 is my very best score. I spent 6 months preparing for it, and that's what I got, and I'm actually very happy with it. Then it's like, well, don't retake it. I mean, if you can't improve on your best score, you're not going to be able to improve. But if there's a case, there's room for improvement. That's your first order of business in this case. Okay, what else do we have here? We have maybe a candidate that had a pretty interesting career. Setting off working for a top pharmaceutical company as a scientist in R&D. That's all very interesting. But then switch to family business, which may well, again, be a very good experience, but it's obviously a very different experience. The fact that the goals didn't appear to be well developed just made me think that they've gone from one situation to another situation and they're just trying to figure out another situation without actually really understanding and having that sort of forward thinking approach where they know where they want to go and now they're using the MBA to get to that next step. And we had some conversation about this and they sort of came up with some ideas for their goals, but I worry that this is going to be an element of their application that's going to be vulnerable. Being in event planning right now in India, it's probably not the best situation to be in during COVID-19. I'm sure these events are getting scaled back, if not cancelled, and so on and so forth. So I get that there's all this other stuff going on that's probably highly distracting. I have a few concerns here, Graham.
Yeah, which, I mean, understandable. So my thing with this candidate, by the way, I learned that I knew that Indian weddings were big, but this person actually specified like 2,000 guests and 3 days long, which now I'm feeling like I got gypped when I got married because I didn't really have that kind of celebration. But anyway, yeah. So
I'll have to go for my third marriage to try to make up for that, I suppose. Yeah. No, I'm kidding, right? I would never do that.
Yeah, I hope your wife isn't listening. all right, so no, but I think this person, it's tricky because on the one hand, I did not like the discussion they had where, you know, we went back and forth, or you kind of said, gee, GRE is a little low at 319. You're in an overrepresented, you know, part of the pool applying from India. And they were kind of like, oh, isn't there another way to kind of make my candidacy look good academically without having to retake the test? And I think they've implied it might be challenging time-wise. And I'm sort of like, wait, it's July. The application deadlines at earliest are September. There's clearly time to study, self-study, or take an online class and boost that score. And if they just, I would just recommend they look at the average GRE score at the schools on their list, and they will suddenly see an emerging trend that, you know, highlights the fact that they're probably 5+ points low from the average at a lot of these schools on the GRE. And again, if they're in an overrepresented portion of the applicant pool, they ideally need to be above the average at their target schools. So I would say if I'm an admissions officer and I see someone who's taken the test once, falled well short of my average and is overrepresented, I'd sort of be like, why am I bothering here? This person hasn't even just taken the test twice, you know, just to try.
Right.
It's one thing if someone takes it a couple times and they're unable to boost the score, at least you can say, look, they gave it an effort. It just didn't work out. So I want to see that. I think the conversation they had with you on the wires was excellent because I think you sort of pushed them to flesh out a potential career path. And I kind of see a story emerging, which is scientists in pharma biotech having a great time. Something happens at home that requires them to basically leave that post after 2.5 years and tend to the family business. And while that wasn't their choice, they've learned A, B, and C from that, mostly probably leadership and teamwork stuff and planning big events, but that they want to use the MBA now to transition back into their passion, which is healthcare, and to do so on a kind of management, kind of a consulting side of things, which in some respects, like you were saying, it combines, the sort of maybe leadership experience they've had with the family business along with the healthcare experience as a scientist. So I think there is a storyline here that could be woven. And then the only thing becomes a question of if they really want to do healthcare related consulting and stuff, then making sure that the schools on their list, I see they have Duke, they have Kellogg. They don't have Wharton, although, you know, again, depending on the test score, that they may leave it off because they just don't think they can make the cut. But, you know, getting the schools on their list that are kind of healthcare oriented and would help facilitate that sort of transition back into the field for them would make sense to me. But yeah, it's just an interesting case because they have this really two different worlds in terms of their career experience. And yet they're overrepresented and facing a low test score. So a couple of different things they got to tackle before they can be truly competitive, I think.
Yeah, I think you explained it extremely well, actually, Graham, in terms of how strategically they should approach their narrative and their story. And also in terms of their school selection, they also have Keenan Flagler on there. That's also pretty strong in terms of the healthcare domain.
Yes.
So I think you're right. And I wasn't as big a believer in this, but until you explained it, they have a story that they can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So executing on that. The final thing that I think is worth noting is, you know, despite the fact that they do have time to retake this GRE, which they do, hopefully they do that, they need to probably get at least a number of these applications in the first round.
Yes.
Again, they're coming from this overrepresented group, so get it in the first round. And some candidates, and we'll talk about this more actually in our webinar tomorrow, but some candidates fall in the trap of, all right, I applied to my top schools on my list in the first round, and if I'm not successful second round, I'll just apply to all my safety schools and I'll figure out where I'm going then. The problem with that, if you're from an overrepresented group, is, you know, when you start applying in the second round, you might actually miss the boat there too, even if it's at schools that are slightly less competitive than the ones you applied in the first round. So my advice, if they're applying to a portion of these schools in the first round and a portion of these schools in the second round, is I would mix up the competitiveness of the schools that they apply in the first round to include a reach, a couple of targets, and a safety. Basically, my point is include a safety into the first round as well as then a nice mix in the second round, rather than, and normally in conventional wisdom is, I apply to all my reach schools in the first round and then the rest in subsequent rounds.
Yeah, that's a good point. You always want to make sure you get something and get something in early, especially when you're overrepresented.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, I think there's a storyline here. And I think, I didn't mention it, but obviously this is an interesting time to be passionate about healthcare and to be wanting to work in healthcare. And so I'm sure that there's a story that they can tell that explains why they want to go back, to healthcare, despite, obviously it sounds like the family business needs them, but maybe they've done some things in their short time there to, get it back on the straight and narrow or whatever they needed to do so that it can be run in their absence, if that's not their passion anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move along. We have a third ApplyWire entry this week. Again, I didn't really mention it, but we've had a number of people are, we're just seeing more and more people who are focused on next year. And we love seeing your profiles. So obviously, if you're listening to this and you have not yet put an ApplyWire entry in, you're going to be applying in the coming year. And we can mention this in our Admissions Academy too. Throw one up on the website. You get feedback from us as well as others in the community. And sometimes you get featured on the show. So let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number 3. This person is looking at 4 schools, which include Georgetown, NYU, Wharton, and Yale. And they want to start, they indicate, in 2022. So they have a little bit more time. They have been working in government. And post-MBA, they want to get into entrepreneurship. GPA is 3.5, and they have 4 years of work experience, although I'm not sure if that means they have 4 now or 4 by the time of matriculation. It's unclear. They're in New York, and they would love to be in the New York area after business school as well. And they're kind of wondering, like, they're looking for advice from us on which MBA programs have the right fit, given that they want to build a technology company after business school. And they mentioned that the tech company would be focused on improving the delivery of government services, operations, and or quality of public education through technology. So that's kind of the basic profile. Now, you had some back and forth with them, and you and I talked about this candidate before we came on air. So why don't you kind of just share some of your thoughts, and then we'll get into it on this person's background. And, even the undergraduate background is a little unusual too. So let's talk through, what do you think of this person?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think this person is probably very, very strong. Or at least a strong candidate. I mean, they've got 3.5 GPA. You could argue that's a little bit low, below average, but it's certainly within that sort of one standard deviation away from the mean, I should think. I'm reading up on my statistics. I reckon this person has good experience and will take the GMAT and do very well. They'll prepare well, do very well. I'm hoping, and I imagine they'll do that. There are a couple of things that sort of, I'm not saying rubbed me the wrong way, but sort of alerted me to, to make sure that they don't do this in the application. I'll hit this straight up front, Graham. On the one hand, the candidate says, you know what, I'm not a trust fund kid. I had to go through college. They then actually said that they were grateful for the financial aid that they received and so on and so forth. But I just want to make sure that in the written applications and in their narrative, they don't use any of that kind of language. ADCOM is going to be able to recognize, you know, where you've come from and how things have worked out for you and so on and so forth, versus other candidates in the pool without you saying up front, you know, I wasn't a trust fund kid. So, and I know this candidate's smart enough not to, you know, use that sort of language directly in their application, but I'm throwing it out there anyway on this podcast because other people are listening, and you just want to make sure you don't use that type of approach. We're smart enough to recognize, and I'm not saying this candidate's necessarily a bootstrapper, but maybe they are a bootstrapper, but when we see a bootstrapper, we're smart enough to recognize a bootstrapper. And what I mean by a bootstrapper is someone that perhaps had to, you know, really sort of fight for their opportunities and really, you know, not necessarily struggle for, but maybe they didn't have the opportunity, access to an Ivy League education and an opportunity and access to first job out in investment banking or top tier consulting or whatever, because they didn't recruit at their school and so on and so forth. And we talked about this before on the podcast. So, you know, if you went to a state school, that's fine. How well did you do in that environment? What impact did you have in that environment? And how did you make the most of the resources in that environment to make your next step and then your next step and your next step? And it looks to me that this person made the most of their experiences in these different environments. They were active in their school, they're active now, they're doing interesting things. So it all looks really good, Graham. I just want to make sure they don't use that language. A question that they asked, though, and I'll throw this back to you, because I did actually suggest, you know, what other schools they're looking at, maybe look at Harvard or something like that. And their response was, HBS seems overly large, not a fan of big classes. If you're HBS's ADCOM, how do you respond to that, Graham?
Oh, so okay, so I get to play, I get to pretend to be Chad.
You're Chad Losey, yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, what I would say is that, first of all, as at most of the top business schools, the class is divided up into, you know, more bite-sized chunks, right? So there are sections at HBS that you go through the entire core curriculum with, and your section at HBS is typically somewhere between 80 and 90 students, I believe. And you take all your classes with them. And you know, it's interesting. There are literally section reunions or kind of alumni functions with HBS, because that's how close the bond becomes with that group. Because you're literally, remember, at HBS, you can't waive anything. So you travel through the entire first year with this group of people, and you get to know them, I would argue, probably better than you might get to know your, you know, fellow classmates at many other MBA programs, just because of the fact that you're not in every class with the same people at most other MBA programs. So that's what I would say. Now, in looking at it from the other side, though, I understand where this person is coming from, because the truth is, if you go to a place like Dartmouth, they too have sections, although they call them cohorts, I believe. Or clusters, I can't remember what the term is, but theirs are a bit smaller. I think they're between 60 and 70. So, you know, when you're taking a core class at Tuck, you are going to have a slightly, you know, smaller number of people than you would at HBS. But what's interesting is Wharton also has, cohorts that are about 60 kids large. So it's interesting just in the sense that you can have big programs like Wharton and Harvard dividing the class up into chunks that are not necessarily the same size. And you can have small programs like Darden or Tuck that are dividing it up, but also still arriving at the same number or maybe a little smaller. Like, it depends. So you really have to do your due diligence to figure that stuff out. The thing that struck me, there were two things that jumped out at me with this candidate. First of all, I love the fact they're working in government. I think that that will help them to stand out as a little bit of a non-traditional. GPA seems fine. Obviously, they still need to take the test. And that, in my view, might determine how they go with their applications in terms of, you know, where they're going to target. But two things jumped out at me. They mentioned they have a dual undergraduate degree or dual undergraduate degrees from a liberal arts, LAC, so liberal arts college, I guess, and then Ivy Engineering School. And the major was engineering management. The thing that I was trying to figure out is, how do they have, did they go to college twice? Did they do this in parallel? My experience is that when someone has a dual undergraduate degree, it's usually from the same institution. And it was unclear if that's what happened here. I mean, maybe they went to Penn or something and they did the liberal arts college plus a engineering degree until they got the two from the same institution. But it just was unclear to me. And so I was like, I was just scratching my head because they didn't refer to the liberal arts piece as being Ivy.
Right.
But they did refer to the engineering pieces coming from Ivy. So it was just a little, I couldn't figure it out. Would love more information there. I totally agree that, you know, you never want to throw anyone under the bus when you're in the process of describing your own background. And so I really want to echo, like, you don't say, oh, I'm not a trust fund kid like all those other jerks that are applying to business school or something. You want to, you know, you want to keep it like, you know, just focus on you and who you are and let the AdCom jump to those those conclusions on their own. And then the last thing I was going to say is, and I hope the person's listening and takes this advice to heart, I wasn't moved by their career plan. I think that many would agree that, you know, the delivery of government services, whether it's education or anything else, could benefit from, you know, better kind of operation streamlining or use of technology, as is true probably in almost any sector, right? Tech can help.
Yeah.
But this was just so general that I just was left wondering, well, okay, so you want to use technology to help with the delivery of government services or maybe with education. I mean, there are like literally hundreds, if not thousands, of companies that do just that, particularly look at the education side alone. So I would want this person to flesh out those goals and ideally to weave them in a little bit better with what they've done to date and how, like, what specifically have they seen in the government that would benefit from, you know, a better use of technology. And then, you know, come up with a rough kind of business idea around that. It may not be the end of the world, frankly, for them to pitch a short-term goal that doesn't involve them starting their own business straight away, but it maybe involves them going to work for a tech company that's in the general field of what they want to ultimately do and then have a longer-term goal of starting their own thing. That just might be more palatable for a non-traditional candidate who's heading off to school. So those were the things that jumped out at me. Obviously, they're going to need a decent test score. They're going to need to refine their goals, and they're going to need to describe their background in a way that, you know, allows the admissions committee to, you know, to kind of jump to whatever conclusions they want to jump to about, you know, this person's background and things. But I feel like they have the ingredients. It's all here, save the test score, which will come hopefully. And they should be in great shape. I love the candidacy, and I think they could aim even higher than the four schools listed here, potentially,
yeah,
depending on, you know, how they go.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting case though. I mean, we don't see that many people from government, so it's always interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. No, and like you say, I think there are other schools, whether it's Sloan, Harvard, yeah, several others that could fit well for this candidate. Tuck was one we talked about, and they recognise, I think, is a good fit also.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, hopefully a great candidate, and hopefully, end of a great show, Graham. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Maybe another review.
Yeah.
Probably not from these candidates, but from someone listening.
Yeah. So thanks for picking these out. As always, we'll be back in 1 week's time, and we'll have news of how our second Admissions Academy class went, and hopefully everyone will join us for that. But thanks, Alex, for picking these out, and we'll see you in 1 week's time.
Yeah. Best of luck, everyone. Stay safe.